Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's National Quality Forum Resource Use Steering Committee call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ashley Wilbon. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us and being able to participate on this call. And we'll talk a little bit about the timeline, but things have been moving and changing, and so appreciate you guys accommodating this call and your schedule. I'm going to do a short roll call just to see who's with us today, and then we'll go ahead and move on. So, Doris and Bruce, I know you're there.
Yes.
Paul Barnett.
Okay, sorry.
Jack Bohan. Septa Curtis. Curtis Elward. William Golden.
Here.
Thank you. Lisa Graybert.
Here.
Ethan Helms. Ann Hendrich.
Hello.
Hi, Ann. Thomas Lee.
Here.
Renee Marcus Hoden. Jack Needleman. Margaret Neff. I'm sorry, she's not. Mary Kay O'Neill. I know she wasn't going to be here. David Pinson. Steve Phillips. David Redfern.
Present.
William Rich.
Here.
Jeff Rich.
Here.
Tom Rosenthal. Barbara Rudolph. Joe Stefanski.
Here.
Jim Weinstein. Dolores Yanagihara.
Hi, Ashley. I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, we'll go ahead and jump right in. For those of you that are on the webinar, the next slide say meeting objectives now, so hopefully everyone can see that. So, I'm sorry, how about I introduce staff who's here? My name is Ashley. Most of you guys hopefully know my voice by now. And in the room with me is Sally. She's here as well.
Welcome, everyone.
Okay.
So, today, the purpose of today's call is to get steering committee input and approval of the resource use evaluation criteria. We've been doing some work since the in-person meeting with a work group that was developed. We had a couple conference calls and wanted to kind of put everything in front of you again with the compilation of the input that was given at the in-person steering committee of the work group and as well as some internal review that we've done here, and make sure that the steering committee is on board before it goes out for public and member comments in the next few weeks. So, that is the purpose of today's call, and we'll give a little bit more detail about that as we go forward. Just in terms of what we've done so far and where we are with the project, in terms of the white paper development, we, since the in-person meeting, have been working to compile and address the comments in the white paper draft. We distributed the white paper to the subcommittee, which was the white paper subcommittee, and had internal NQF review of the white paper just last week. We'll be working to integrate those comments and post the white paper for comment at the same time as the criteria, hopefully around September 10th or so. We'll be distributing the white paper to the full steering committee before it goes out for comment for you guys to review during comment period as well, and then we'll have that follow-up call. But essentially, we're wrapping things up, and we're really happy with where the paper is right now. So, as I've mentioned before, we had a couple of conference calls with the what we were calling criteria and specifications work group. We had two conference calls. The first conference call on July 30th was really to get input and agreement on the specification steps that would be subject to evaluation at the time of submission. So, originally, at the in-person meeting, I think we had some of the steps divided up into maybe three or four steps, but with some more research of the literature out there and integration of some of the terminology and methodologies recognized by CMS, we ended up dividing those steps into five modules, if you will. Those are also summarized in the summary of the meeting for July 30th. You can kind of see how those ended up falling out a little bit. They're also in another document that we'll get to in just a second, but just for some context, we ended up with those five modules, which were data protocol, the measure episode clinical logic, measure episode construction logic, adjustments for comparability, profiling, and then the last one was the profiling, implementation, assigning, and reporting module. So we'll talk a little bit more about that soon, but the work group did had a few modifications and changes as to what those each of those modules and the sub-steps entailed, and we'll talk about that shortly. The second call that we had on August 5th was to get agreement on the evaluation criteria and the corresponding submission requirements. So that call was really focused on looking at the evaluation criteria with the input that was at the steering committee meeting and really kind of take a deeper dive into what was there and make sure that we weren't missing anything to add any additional context or details to what was there. We also, during that interaction with the work group, as a recommendation that came out of that, was to put together a list of all of the items that will be required to submit a resource use measure. So they found it helpful to have a separate document that was that bulleted out all the items that would be required to submit, which we've also attached that to the email for today's materials. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But just to give some context of what will be required, and we'll be seeking some of your feedback on that as well. And kind of in conjunction with that bulleted list we put together, the submission items, we've been working internally with our IT team to figure out some options for putting together an online submission form that would be ready in time for the call for measures. So that obviously we won't be accepting paper, but there will be a form similar to what is now available for quality measures, but electronically, and something that would be easy for measure developers to access, you know, attach documents into and so forth. So we're working on that, and this list of submission items is guiding that effort. So that's where we are with that. In terms of the project timeline, as I mentioned, we're going to put the white paper and the evaluation criteria out for comment around September 10th or so. That will be a 30-day comment period for both the public and the membership, NQF membership. I did send out a save the date, I believe, on Monday for October 20th. We will have a conference call with the steering committee again to discuss the comments on both the white paper and the evaluation criteria at that point. And those comments will feed back into any changes we'd like to make before they're submitted to the CSAC for review of the criteria. They won't be reviewing the white paper. They'll read the white paper, I'm sure, but obviously for guidance as well on how the criteria was developed. But they really need to review and approve the criteria. The evaluation criteria is really an operational document for NQF, and anything of that nature goes through CSAC for review. And, you know, given the nature of this project, it's something new for NQF, and the potential impact of this, the board will also be reviewing it at a much higher level, but they want to have an idea of what's going out there, and that will happen at the end of November. We'll also be submitting the final white paper to HHS at the end of November, and now we're looking at a call for measures in December. So slight change in the timeline, but as things have come up and as we move through the process, we're realizing that we're having to add in some additional processes and to make time to accommodate for those. So I'm going to pause there and ask for any questions on where we are, where we're going.
Ashley, this is Bill Ridge.
Hi.
Once the CSAC and the board review it, is there any chance of this committee getting a chance to comment on it, or whose responsibility will it be to, is it strictly your responsibility as staff to explain some of the positions of the white paper and the criteria that we've developed?
Right. So at the obviously the CFAC is a public meeting, so we would what I've done, I think, as a general practice for most of the project managers is to distribute the CFAC dial-in information so you guys can listen in. We will definitely have the co-chairs there to at least available via phone to answer any questions that the CFAC may have during the time they're reviewing it. And once the review is complete, we'll send out a summary of the discussion to the steering committee, which is, I think, general practice. Beyond that, I'm not sure. Were you thinking something?
No, I just wanted to make sure that there was some input from this committee, and there apparently is through the chairs.
Yes.
For any CSAC deliberations.
Yes, that is.
Or changes.
Right. Any other questions?
Well, this is Doris Lotz. I just wanted to share with the steering committee members on the phone that I had a little bit of an aha moment as I was preparing for this call. And having had enough space in between our meetings and discussions, I thought, all right, let me go back to the beginning and play it forward here a little bit start here with where we're at today and what we're challenged to do in the next couple of months again. I took an older document from our June and July meetings, the evaluation criteria, and crosswalked it to the evaluation criteria that we got today. So if you think visually as I do, it went from a two-column landscape document to a three-column landscape document. In the two-column landscape document, the steering committee had made a number of suggestions as far as how these criteria could be applied going forward and made some specific changes to the verbiage as well. It seems unlikely that all of those changes are going to be embraced as changes in our evaluation criteria, and that what the steering committee has been charged with primarily is how to take the existing NQF criteria and apply them in this new construct. So that was a bit of an aha moment for me, like, oh, so we're not materially changing or possibly even rewriting completely the criteria, not that we ever intended to. The essential structure of the NQF criteria is really quite good. But some of the modifications that we suggested, if anyone else went through that similar exercise, you'll see there's not a direct crosswalk between the recommendations that were made and the criteria as they may exist in their final form. So just to share that with folks, and again, I had a chance to share that with Bruce and Ashley and Sally ahead of time, and certainly wanted to have just a brief discussion for those on the phone whether you have any comment on that. And then as mentioned right now, I think that I'm making a mental note to myself that when we are able to participate with some of the other NQF folks and leadership who are not a direct part of this process, that's an interesting strategy is that performance measurement community changes. You know, how do those criteria, those NQF criteria, have to change to be appropriately responsive and measure that? But I'll stop there, and I'd love to hear from some of my fellow committee members on that.
Well, maybe while you guys are absorbing that, I'm not sure if this is an appropriate time. I did want to take some time to talk a little bit about the documents that were attached to email that I sent. I think being absorbed in this and sending these out sometimes, I assume that everyone understands it as well as I do. But I want to make sure that everyone kind of understands the approach and a little bit of context into how the documents were put together. And this is piggybacking on Doris's comment, because there isn't necessarily a direct crosswalk from some of the other versions of the criteria that you've seen before, but there's been several things that have taken place since then. We've had, you know, two work group meetings. We've had some internal review of it. And so it has changed visually in how it's being presented and framed. So the document that – I'm not sure. Can you – those of you who are sitting at a computer, can you see the Word document that says draft resource use measure evaluation criteria?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
You mean it's supposed to be on the meeting sharing site?
The webinar, yes.
No, I don't have, well, maybe.
Oh,
Yeah, it's very hard to read. I can't get the whole thing on the screen.
It's not showing up at all on mine, but I have the document, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. So for those of you that are, I apologize. It's hard for me to see what you guys see. I can just see kind of what's on my screen, but bear with me here. It's the document that was, maybe if you can open it directly from your computer if you have it printed out. It's that landscape document that Doris was referring to with the three columns.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to kind of talk a little bit about this document and how it came about. So initially, as Doris mentioned, we started out and had charged the steering committee with looking at the existing NQF evaluation criteria for quality measures and tailoring it to reflect the needs to evaluate resource use measures. And so previous iterations of this had, you know, bolded text and some strike-throughs and so forth. And through the evolution of that, I think the way that it's been requested to be framed is similar to that of other efforts within NQF that have done similar projects around tailoring criteria for special measures, particularly the composite measures. So rather than, in some cases, than creating additional criteria, what we've done is in the middle column of this table, you'll see we've kind of explained the terminology for some of the words that we wanted to change in the context of resource use measures. And I think this is kind of the approach that Doris was getting at in terms of how we started out really doing kind of wording changes and really changing the criteria versus now we're kind of, it's more of an how it applies to resource use measures. I guess it's open to discussion about that approach, but wanted to make sure everyone was comfortable and understood what the table was presenting. So in the far left column, we have the NQF evaluation criteria as it exists now. The middle column, again, is for how some of the criteria for those portions of it that need to kind of be explained more so for in the context of resource use measures. And then the last column on the right is any additional submission items that will be requested to by the developer to support, you know, that criteria to demonstrate that they have met or for you guys to evaluate whether or not they've met that criteria. And so obviously everyone, you know, visualizes things and absorbs things in a different way. We kind of struggle with how best to present this because it is a lot of information, and we landed on this. So any, you know, feedback in general about the approach, I guess, is open, and then we can maybe, if everyone's comfortable with that, we can go ahead and move through and see what we have now and see if anyone has any additional comments or...
Well, a question, Bill Golden, I have a question. You know, we are really giving folks a fairly good, lengthy laundry list of things they need to consider. Has the staff or the work group considered, you know, priorities as we go through this, that some elements are more important than others because it's unlikely that people are going to be able to achieve everything and they're going to achieve, they're going to have strengths in different areas. So are there some absolutes that need to be there as opposed to ideal?
Yes, and those are similar to what they would be for...
You're a little distant there, so...
Yeah, so we'll make a very good point. It's not explicit in this document, but it is, you know, conditions for consideration, for example, must be met. Staff will even pass it on to the steering committee to review until they meet those. The importance criteria is a must-pass. It's a yes-no. If you don't meet the importance criteria, the rest of the measure is not evaluated. But then when we start getting into scientific acceptability, feasibility and usability, that's where it becomes, you know, the steering committee could think that they passed this with very strongly. They can kind of give a less strong pass partially, I think is what it's called. And then you look at all those various grades of passing or not passing to make a recommendation. If there are some things that you all as a steering committee think we should signal as priorities, we would want to think about how to frame that. But in general, we realize that measures will have strengths in other areas, and it's up to the steering committee to make determinations about as each core level is doing, and then we look at it. All of you look at that together and make a recommendation.
Yeah, I guess my concern would be, obviously importance is critical, but we have so many technical aspects on these items that it might be smart for, you know, at least to give some guidance about some things that are more important than others. Otherwise, one of the problems with the evaluation process, it, I don't want to say it gets a little random, but, you know, some measures get through on some weaknesses as opposed to other weaknesses, and it gets harder to be consistent if we don't have a fairly structured approach to some of the scientific aspects of the measures.
Yeah, and actually, if I could just add in, Bill, this is Helen Burstyn. I think, you know, that third column of the items that would be requested of the developers, I think it would be very useful for the committee to take a good look at. I mean, those are clearly the ideals of everything you would absolutely want. But, if the group wants to, you know, identify the absolute must-haves versus the would-be nice, that might be something important as we think about trying to actually get developers to submit all this information.
Right. So I think we would want the steering committee input on those priorities.
Well, to go back, this is Bill Rich again. I now understand I had some difficulty, like Doris did, following my scribbled notes from our original meeting with this new format with the three columns, and I now understand that. But one overarching concern that I have is that it's brought up repeatedly by our co-chairs, that as we look very carefully at all the criteria, we've now made this very comprehensive and complex, and I feel like we probably will inhibit any innovative non-commercial applications in this process. Unfortunately, that's the product of trying to make this fair, transparent, and scientifically valid, but I really do now understand the chair's concern about strict criteria that will inhibit innovation. I can't imagine specialties with a detailed knowledge of maybe some narrow, very high cost issues with high variability. They're not going to apply to, or even bring this to anybody's attention. But I'm afraid that's just the way it's going to have to be.
Do you have any suggestions on how we could balance that a little bit better, or is it, or you just want to make sure that point is?
No, I just want to make that point because I think we had a very, very detailed discussion of what we thought priorities were, and they were all valid points. But if you look at our final product, I do think we've created a threshold that's very high. I don't have any problems with that, but I now understand, as I said, the chair's concern about proscribing or maybe inhibiting some innovative applications.
Well, this is Tom Rosenthal, and I was one of the supporters of sort of that idea, and yet I got persuaded towards the end of the conversation that the NQF process was as precise as it is because the threshold is quite high. And the direction that we were going in the meeting was attempting to describe the idea that perhaps there could be works in progress that would be considered as pilot kinds of measures, and yet that doesn't fit the way the NQF works, and that's where it got left.
I agree, Tom.
Yeah.
Well, this is Paul Barnett. I think we should just take some comfort in knowing that, yes, this is complicated because this whole idea is not easy, efficiency in healthcare, and if it had been easy, it would have already been done. So I think we have to accept there's going to be a certain level of complexity in this.
And I don't disagree with that, Paul, but again, I think we will inhibit, I think, some perhaps innovative ideas. But and I don't disagree with our product. I think we all put a lot of thought into what were legitimate criteria, and I think we have to go forward. But I do think that we... the bar is going to be pretty high, and I doubt we're going to see any real new players come into the, to suggest things to us.
Well, I guess the other thought would be is that if we don't feel like we have enough applications, then we can, you know, down the road there will be the opportunity to simplify the criteria.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good fallback position.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Dolores. I do think it would be helpful to really go through and think about if every item is absolutely required. And I'm not talking about just a response, maybe saying it's not acceptable, but I mean, does something absolutely have to have been done, or which things are sort of, it helps support the evaluation of the measure, but it's not critical to be endorsed. So I think that would be helpful because I'm actually in a position where we've got these measures that we're using, we've tested them, we're using them, but I agree. I don't know that I can support all of the information that's being requested, and I'm not saying it's not important, but it is that balance of what kinds of measures do we want and how high is the bar, or do we want just the commercially available ones that are out there already? I think if we can kind of put some thought into, you know, which are really the must-haves and which are the, you know, helps to evaluate but isn't critical, would be helpful, and that might make it a little bit more manageable for others.
And this is Sally, just to reinforce that I think it would be really helpful to get the input both from all of you as well as when we work out to the reach out and public comment. Further, a lot of the submission items are not required, but if they don't submit, they have to provide a rationale or justification of why not. So we can have those where if you don't submit the appropriate data, it's kind of a you cannot go any further, but then there are others where there's an opportunity for them to, in words, provide their justification or reasoning behind not having that information. But I think what I'm hearing a lot here is to upfront provide more guidance as well on which criteria, which submission items would lead the steering committee to more likely select one measure over another. If I'm hearing correctly.
Yeah. Well, I have just a little trouble with that concept because we spent, you know, the better part of a day and a half going through these things kind of one by one, and I'm not sure in my own head which one is more important than another. It was sort of an aggregate thing, but I do like Sally's suggestion of there are some that the rules simply won't allow you to get past if the information is not there, and there are others that would allow for an explanation, and I think I'd be okay with that. Trying to prioritize these, I'm not sure where I would go with that.
Hi, this is Bruce. I had to leave for a minute, so I apologize. But I did hear the remark about potentially discouraging measure developers, and I know that the NQF team intends to get feedback from potential measure developers. It'd be good to know if there is any one criterion or two that are deal breakers. You know, if there are one or two that really do discourage the development and submission, we'd like to know that and maybe could make some adjustments based on that. But I think getting some feedback from measure developers would really be useful. And I apologize if I'm repeating somebody else's suggestion.
No, Bruce, that's a good point. I didn't mention this during the kind of intro piece, but during the comment period for the white paper and the criteria, that submission list that we gave to you guys for review, while it's not subject to comment because it's more of an operational document, we do have plans to circulate it among the measure developers that we know, that we have contact with, to get their feedback and potentially work with them on ways to, you know, make it more, user-friendly but still getting the information that we need. So that's just an additional.
Yeah, well, then I would just add to that, make sure that the feedback includes specific information about which criteria appear to be the most difficult to abide by to see if there's any way of softening them. Because someone else said earlier, to inhibit, you know, creativity in the development of these measures would be really unfortunate.
Yeah, and just one thing to add, this is Helen. You know, if there are specific concerns about specific areas, please, this would be a great opportunity to let us know so you can discuss them. But again, remember, it's just in draft form as well, so it's going to go out for comment, including comment from measure developers.
Right.
So that's, you know, in some ways the transparency of our process makes this a bit easier because you will, in fact, hear somebody says, boy, you've raised the bar so high none of us can submit, then that's information you'll get to discuss in October. But, you know, if there are specific concerns about some items, this would be the right time to talk about them.
Helen, how does NQF, this is Doris, how does NQF go about making sure that those kinds of comments are heard and people don't look at something, perceive the impossible, and then not bother responding? I believe Ashley might have said there are a list of people that you will deliberately go out and seek their opinion of, and who are those people, and how does that unfold?
Yeah, part of this is we get a lot of comments on these kinds of things, and I think there's such interest in this area that I think we'll get a good deal of comments here. But, you know, Sally can talk to you about, you know, the fact that she's already got a list of the likely suspects who will probably submit, and I think her thought, I'll let her finish, but I think her thought was to go to each of those logical people and say, this is what we're thinking, please send us your comments. And again, I think it might be useful for the steering committee to also indicate who should be those people that she should go to, because you may know some pockets of folks that we just wouldn't know either. Sally, you want to add anything?
No, that's absolutely right, Helen. So, you know, public comment goes out to everybody, but we're asked to reach out directly to the ones that we know. They know public comment is coming soon, but anyone you want to add to our list, we welcome that opportunity. We'll also be having WebExes. We have regularly scheduled WebExes that the measure developers call into to find out what's going on with NQF. Ashley's already on the schedule for one of those in September or October. I can't remember. So we're making every effort we can in addition to just the normal comment process. Measure developers are always interested in any changes that are going to happen. So I think we feel that they hope, you know, if it is too high, they'll either call us directly or submit it in the public comment and say, what are you guys doing?
Can you give us a flavor of who the usual suspects are?
Would be Ingenix. Thomson and Reuters. I've reached out to Doug Cave for Cave Consulting. We have a contact with ABMS, with NCQA, and I'm still trying to reach out to 3M, and I think I've got a contact from Karen. So those are the six. Am I missing? And Prometheus. Thank you. And Prometheus as well.
Okay, I get the flavor of it. The group that I would think of that might be interested in weighing in on this but might be overwhelmed by the complexity are the specialty societies. Many of them are trying to think about resource use and its measurement and already have some measures but probably don't quite meet this threshold, and that might be another set of folks to reach out to.
Okay.
You're absolutely correct. This is Bill again. I just returned from an international retina meeting. And you can have variation in one of the 20 high-cost areas between 6,000 and 53,000 over 2 years, and yet they're not going to come forward. I obviously didn't share anything, but they are not going to step forward with that, and maybe they could do it through one of the big three that were just listed, but they're just not going to do it, even though they know what the evidence base is, the justification for using the lower.
See, and I think that if we, this is Paul again, if we are ruthless and say we cut the number of things we requested by 20% or 25% or more, I don't actually think it's going to result in a change in the number of submissions.
No, I don't either, but what I do think is if we reached out to them explicitly and said, we would appreciate your comments and feedback, we would probably get from the Ophthalmologic Society or the Retina Society or whichever entity that one was, we would love to submit the following measure because we believe it's a powerful one in our community, but it doesn't meet one, two, three, four of your criteria, and then we'd have better information about possibly a second phase of this thing.
I think that's a great idea, this bill.
I think, this is Doris again, I think reaching out to some payers who would also logically use these resources, to comment on, even if they're not resource submitters themselves, as end consumers, they might be, they might have some valid comments to hear.
Good idea.
They certainly will.
Is there
some entity we haven't mentioned yet, but is there some entity that's in charge of the ACG, DCG methodology, the ambulatory care groupers and the diagnostic care grouper? There's another case mix system, which I don't recall seeing in the white paper.
You're right. We didn't include much discussion about the more ACGs and DCGs. I'm open to input from the steering committee whether we missed something that we should spend a little bit of time trying to find a home for it in the white paper, or what the thoughts are on that.
Sally, this is Doris. You broke up a little bit for me. I didn't hear what your comment was. Would you please repeat it?
I was agreeing that it is true that in the white paper we did not spend a lot of time talking about what, these measures or approaches, I want to say, that have been used often for per capita rate setting, ACGs, et cetera. And I'm very interested in the steering committee's input if that's something we should examine again, or is it just some comments that we might expect to get in September, comment period, what have you? I'm kind of just open it back up to the steering committee.
Well, I'm just curious why that is that an oversight, or did you try to find that information and not get it, or?
I would say it was a result of trying to keep the focus of the paper on the resource use measures. And initially the focus being pretty heavy on the episode-based measures, I noticed that we didn't spend really any time talking about those approaches. I was having a hard time envisioning if they would be measures that would be submitted, or are they really regression models, et cetera. So I think, again, just really interested, does it seem like it's a distinct piece? I think it was the came about that way through various foci that we took on for the paper, but I wouldn't say it was intentional or planned. It just kind of came about that way.
Yeah, and then the other one I was thinking about is, I mean, there's some more generic ones like the preventable hospitalization stuff, and I don't know if there's anybody that actually is a steward of those concepts, like the ambulatory sensitive conditions, other than perhaps AHRQ, yeah.
And I do think some measure developers have been trying to work on some of these very complicated algorithms as well. Take what AHRQ has done in trying to make it, I don't know, what do folks think about that?
This is Bruce. My reaction is not to want to add complexity to what's already fairly complex, either the white paper or the criteria. So, I mean, certainly to mention in passing is not a problem, but,
I'm not so much concerned about what's in the white paper, but thinking about this whole question, are we going to get all the submissions that we should be getting? And is there, if there's somebody who's responsible for those measures, if there's a steward of those measures, we should make sure that they're aware of this call for measures.
Oh, all right. So what you're talking about is expanding outreach.
Really.
All in favor of that.
And Paul, some of that will be framed in the call for measures as well. So once we have we're kind of working with the funders to kind of figure out what the balance is for that call for measures. And so when we find that balance and we're getting closer to what that call for measures will look like, we can definitely make sure that we're, covering all our bases, or at least considering all those things.
Right. So in the end, we may decide, along with all of you, to limit the first call for measure to certain areas. But as we think about that, we'll need to know exactly what we are yet and what we know we still want to get in future phases, and that includes exactly what you brought up here. So.
Again, atypical kind of things. You know, obviously you get the big database warehouses and the proprietary group of people. Is there potential for us to get something out of some of the registries, like the ACC, ATS combined efforts that they've been looking at their data, where they're beginning to compare how technology is used and the effectiveness of that technology?
Well, that's why I think the specialty societies are particularly, don't they manage most of those registries?
That's true.
Yeah, the other big one would be the VA system. You know, does the VA have some interesting things that might be of value as well?
Well, this is Paul. That's why I was raising that, because they're using people are using the ACGs and DCGs, and I see the ACGs is evidently a registered John Hopkins ACG system, registered trademark. So I guess they're the folks.
Right.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. But people in VA are using the DCGs, and I know less about where those come from.
Okay, well, on that note, I'm going to kind of redirect us back to the actual criteria and see how far we can get through what we have here. So those of you, again, who have the webinar up on your screen, I scrolled down to the importance to measure and report section. And again, in the middle column, that's kind of clarification or application to resource use measures. And I don't want to spend a lot of time here. We didn't even from the beginning have never really had a lot of changes here. There's a lot of not applicable. I'm going to scroll down to page 4 here, where we get to 1D and 1E, which are new criteria for the resource use. And these would actually be new criteria. They're not an application of. They are actually new sub-criteria, I should say. Importance is the criteria, and then 1D and 1E are sub-criteria of those. So 1D is the purpose and objective of the resource use measure, including its components and the contracts for resource use, are clearly described. And that should be reflected by them describing intent of the measure and rationale for analyzing variation in that way, and then defining, or they will be able to essentially maybe select from a list of unit of resource service or resource units and describe them in detail. So those would be the requested submission items that would reflect or be able to support this criteria. The one below that is 1E, and this would be that the resource use units that are included in the resource use measure are consistent and representative of the conceptual construct represented by the measure. And there's a little bit. Whether the resource use measure development begins with a conceptual construct or a set of resource units, the units included must be conceptually coherent and consistent with the purpose. So that criteria, again, would be supported by the material that they would submit that corresponds with 1D and 1E, actually. So I guess any comments or anything about those? I don't think those have changed much throughout the process, but I just wanted to briefly call your attention to them. Okay, I'm taking silence as typical. And we'll move on. Scientific acceptability is really where the bulk of the recommendations and changes for application are. So we'll just go ahead and move on. So we're on page 6 now. So scientific acceptability and the special considerations column. We've kind of explained here that rather than producing results about quality of care, but in the context of resource use measures, reliability and validity results should be related to the cost or resources used to deliver care. So Again, that's how that particular the explanation of scientific acceptability applies to resource use measures. And for criteria 2A, and this is where those modules really come into play. So if you remember back in one of our early iterations of the criteria, we actually had individual criteria for each of these steps, like each of these modules and some of their sub-steps. And what we've done in this reframing process is rather than changing the criteria, because whether the measure is well-defined and precisely specified doesn't really change. That's still the overarching criteria for this particular part of the scientific acceptability. But for resource use measures, what well-defined and precise specifications means is that they should include rationale and explanation and justifications for each of those five modules. So, and this is part of what the work group spent some time on in deciding what the components of each of these modules should be. And they settled on that each of the five modules should actually be subject to evaluation. But considering some of the discussion that's gone on today, perhaps this may be a place where you discuss maybe whether some things are more required or preferential or
so that one,
there's a lot of detail here.
That one box that you read at the beginning of Section 2 about which said what this is not, that is the what scientific acceptability is not about producing results about the quality of care. So we, I'm a little bit nervous about first saying what it's not before saying what it is.
Okay.
But the other issue is we had talked about that, you know, the best resource measure will also consider quality, and that we didn't want to ignore that altogether. In other words, we wanted to have that as an optional criteria. And I'm hard-pressed now to find out where exactly that has come into that decision has entered into the document. This is sort of something that the subgroup had thought was important to at least allow that possibility.
Right. We addressed that in the usability section where we've given and we can, when we get to that section, we can talk about whether or not that's adequately represented. But we have actually, I think, further down asked in the context of quality what quality measures have been used or can be used or have been used with this resource use measure, and it would just be a listing of those measures.
This is Sally. So, and I think when we get to usability, and even here now, I actually want to open up the conversation. We struggled with where to put that in the evaluation criteria because it was the steering committee seemed in full agreement, and it makes sense in the context of this project that we cannot evaluate the link nor the quality measure itself. So putting it into scientific acceptability, which is about validity and reliability, seemed a little potentially was opening a huge door into
a yeah, no, I wasn't suggesting that. I was just worried that those words that said this is not about quality may be confusing in that later on we say tell us about quality.
Yep, yep. I think we could even probably strike out that rather than and just start with in the context
yeah.
of.
Yeah, that's really all. I didn't want to confuse,
okay.
Send two different messages.
No, very good point. Yeah. Thank you.
In that same column, but down in the 2A row,
uh-huh.
There are bullet items 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Uh-huh.
I found it a little confusing. And number 2 and 3 say measure or episode clinical logic and method, and 3 says measure or episode construction logic. But the measure part was confusing to me. I wasn't sure if we could just delete that and just have it say episode clinical logic and method and then episode construction logic. I mean, on a certain level, all, the word measure could apply to all of these things on all of these pages.
So I think that's...
So I wasn't sure what you meant by, you know, sometimes using measure in a specific way and sometimes it's an umbrella term.
It's episode that is being more specific, at least with what we're trying to do here. So the measures, we're putting in the word measures to make sure we're not just sending out a signal that we're only interested in episode-based measures. So I I guess an option would be to drop the OR episode as well and just say measure, and that could be more, that could be the umbrella.
Clinical logic and method for the measure? I don't know, I guess I wasn't sure what people were trying to, what distinction people were trying to make or not here.
Between measure and episode?
Yeah, I mean, if episode is one type of measure, is that what the intent was?
Yeah, I think episode was just being, and again, really want input here, was being called out because there's a lot of tension about making sure episodes is one of the first avenues to go down. But I think we would definitely be open to dropping the OR episode and just saying measure, and then understanding that episode-based measures are part of this particular landscape. They are a measure.
I think that would be fine. This
yeah.
is Bruce. And then when you get down to item five, I'm not sure that appears to refer to applications of the measures, if unless I'm reading it wrong. Do we really need profiling, implementation, assigning, and reporting? Just at the conceptual level, what is that supposed to get us to? And I see later on we're talking about attribution rules, peer group assignments, sample size. Why not just go directly to those things as opposed to labeling them in a way that might be somewhat confusing?
Could you give an example on that?
Well, item five is profiling, implementation, assigning, and reporting.
Right.
What does that refer to? Do you mean profiling, comparing physicians to each other using resource measures? And then what is implementation, what is assigning and reporting? Does that mean public reporting? I don't know what those things refer to until I get to the right-hand column and it says attribution rules, peer group assignments. Those things make more sense to me than the labels in the middle column.
So are you recommending that we relabel the module itself, because I think they've just been grouped underneath that label, but if it's the label that's confusing.
To me it's confusing to have these four things together, profiling, implementation, assigning, and reporting.
Right.
And I really don't know what they refer to until I get down to the third column where it explains those things, and those things, attribution rules, peer group assignments, why not make that item, instead of labeling, profiling, implementation, then going on to say what we mean is attribution rules, peer group assignments, et cetera,
I recommend that we drop the implementation, assigning, and reporting and just call it profiling.
Is that what this is? Profiling?
Well, that's what CMS called that subsystem, that module, was profiling. So it's these last steps that occur. One of the recommendations as well is to create a definitional glossary document, but...
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this if it's not going to make a lot of difference. But, yes, I would simplify it if you can.
Okay.
Okay. So again, this section, particularly this 2A, is one that, again, that the work group spent a lot of time reviewing, and potentially, I mean, especially the sub steps within each of the modules. And so any, you know, comments or feedback on those, in particular in the context of the suggestion earlier to see which items may be critical and which may not. If there's any discussion around that, now would be a good time to have it.
Well, I have a higher level question here, and maybe which is, we have two documents, right? One is the actual application, where some of these things are described. And the other one is this table, which is sort of supplemental information. And I'm just confused about why we're editing these two documents in tandem, and why not we just have one document, which is the application that has complete information about what people need to provide.
Well, this is essentially the criteria. This last column, that's the submission items, has really just been provided to for this meeting forum as context for how what kind of information would be submitted to support that criteria. But we do, what we're editing now is actually the criteria. So in some, depending on how we decide to present this for comment, this is actually the criteria. And the other document for submission is really, like we said before, an operational document, which is going to be morphed into some type of, you know, usable interface for a measure developer to submit information. So
the criteria has this big emphasis on describing how it's different from what NQF has done for other measures. And so that's important to retain that, to be able to tell how it is the same and different from the prior efforts.
I think it's important for some folks who are reviewing the document and thinking about whether or not this is what NQF wants to go down. But I think in the end, we need to think about how the resource use evaluation criteria will be communicated to the measure developers.
I see. So there may be this may then be end up being a new document that doesn't have that complexity.
Right. Yeah. So we just want to, and the submission form is informed by the evaluation criteria. So if some of you prioritize some of the criteria in the evaluation, it would be reflected in the submission form. It's hard to do the submission form before the evaluation criteria, because we also don't want to ask for a bunch of stuff that the steering committee doesn't want to review. So.
True, but yeah. Okay.
It's chicken and egg. I understand it's also easier in some respects to know what's going to be collected and then think about it. I think we struggle often with which is the best way to present it to all of you.
Well, but the point is we have two lists of things that are going to be collected, and they're in different order, and we keep going between them. And some of the detail is in the submission form, and to understand the criteria is actually – So that's all that's making it a little bit more complicated. But I understand now that the criteria is the important document.
Yeah.
Right. And in the future, hopefully, this is Helen, it'll be the criteria as they reflect it for resource use plus the submission form without that last column.
Right.
Yeah.
And it'll all be mapped back. They'll be numbered in the way that you can look at one and know which criteria to look at, or look at the criteria and have a sense of where to go in your submission form. So there's some formatting that goes on to help users link the two documents.
I have found one, what I believe to be somewhat factual discrepancy in the two related to at level of attribution, but I'll wait till we get to the attribution section to point that out.
Okay.
We can maybe just go ahead and scroll down here. I know there was some discussion over removing that bullet that's highlighted there in red about the basic framework for clustering and assigning codes. I'm not sure. I think there was some discussion with the work group on that, and so maybe someone from the work group who. Oh, okay.
The thought there was, you know, in line with how we typically evaluate quality measures, not requesting too much software application, that we would really want to start by evaluating the clinical logic. So they're not clear lines in the sand of when one part starts and the other, but I think we want to make sure we get the clinical logic in, the construction logic in, et cetera. And those are the things that the TAPs and the steering committees will evaluate. Much like with quality measures, there may be all kinds of implementation steps that is recommended by the developer that's not in the specification. So it's kind of getting us quicker to the clinical logic is the thinking there.
Okay, so why don't we go ahead and move down to, unless there's any specific questions about the modules in between, why don't we go ahead and move down to the, which will soon be renamed Profiling, Implementation, Assigning, and Reporting module. I think, was that Tom?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm fine with what's listed on this document, but in the submission form Word document, one of the levels of attribution that is checkable is population-based, national, states, counties, et cetera. And I thought in one of our very initial discussions that we had identified that that would probably not be an appropriate attribution level.
Okay, that might have just been an oversight. We were somewhat combining and
cutting and pasting is what I figured. So that, I just wanted to point it to then hopefully a minor observation that you'll just clean up.
I would like to input on the steering committee, Tom, because I actually don't remember there being a decision on that not being an appropriate attribution. So I think it's a great question. It's the perfect time to talk about it. Are the things on the attribution list complete? And are there, like you said, recommending removing some of those things?
I think the important thing is, but if you're incapacitated, go ahead.
So that's on page 5 of the Word document of the list of submission form items?
Correct.
I'd affect so.
For those of you that are looking for that reference.
And let me clarify, if I could, Sally, I don't think that it was discussed in this context, but it was discussed in the context of there was going to be an original white paper. If you recall, there were going to be two entire white papers, one of which was, in fact, going to be on geographic variation. And there was a pretty extensive discussion that attribution at that level was not actionable and therefore not completely in conformance with the sort of quality measurements that had come out where actionability and opportunity for performance improvement was a critical criteria for inclusion as a measurement.
This is Doris. Why was the thing, what's the thinking that at a population level, and again looking at page 5, state for example, regional, why is that felt not to be actionable? That may be a hard question to answer. Let me rephrase it. From the position that I sit in the state, I find that highly actionable. So I'm wondering if it was the experience of the group in the subcommittee that wouldn't have seen that. I would be very sad to see this lost. I would leave it as an option if people don't exercise choosing that as an option or have to clarify.
That's the bottom line.
Then that's fine. But to take it out seems to imply that there's no value to anyone. And I guess I would challenge that because at a state level or a regional level, and I would think even at a national level, these metrics should be able to be rolled up or produced.
In a nerve-related issue, you see a searing shirt. It comes and goes pain. Not the kind of thing.
So attribution means we're trying to compare providers, right? I mean, that's in general.
I just don't know.
So if we attribute to, and we could compare health plans, I could see that. But I'm not sure how we'd compare
the
national population. Would that mean we'd compare one country to another or one state to another? Is that the concept?
That's certainly the concept. And I think the provider groups are not in a position at those levels of geography to act on the findings. Aside from the complexity of trying to risk adjust and the variety of other other factors that go into making that a valid measurement.
Well, maybe not the providers, but if you're talking about state Medicaid programs, Doris and her colleagues might have a lot to say about whether there are measures that they can adopt that compare the resource uses of different Medicaid programs, for example.
Lunchtime was over.
So we have somebody that's carrying on a different conversation here that needs to mute.
That's
exactly what I was going to say. Please check to make sure you're on mute if you're...
Well, I'm going to come in as a Medicaid medical director and make some comments.
How I measure this?
The question is going to be whether this is a building block or an accountability measure, and then that may shape what you get. I mean, I'm In fact, I'm looking here. I have to give a talk in the next month or two, and I have data looking at, you know, the 550 analysis and analyzing how we use resources depending on the nature of the patient population. But that's very different from looking at resource use by provider. So are we looking for something like that where I could give you methodology about how to determine the top 5% of your resource expenditures and how to analyze that? Or do you want to look at the performance of facilities in spending or in caring for specific patients? What kind of measures are we looking for specifically in that regard?
Well, I'd always made the assumption, and maybe it's incorrect, that we were looking for more actionable items, and I'm not, maybe I'm wrong again, but I'm not aware of any of the quality measures that have been attributed across this level, because they're designed for accountability and change, at least as I see the NQF, as I recall, the NQF guidance on the thing.
Yeah,
I could go back and pull up the NQF.
I mean, if we have standardized ways for a Medicaid program or an insurance program to look at its most expensive patients or how they spend money, that eventually could be actionable. But well, and I've used some of this information for action-oriented approaches, but it's very different from the kind of conversations we've had about looking at providers.
Yeah. It's a step removed. I would certainly grant you that.
Not really an attribution problem, though. I mean, I think the problem is not that one might want to look at populations or regional groupings of care, but it's not the attribution problem, I don't think. I'm just wondering whether it belongs somewhere else.
Yeah, and again, we have the headache that in terms of actionable, you know, we have limited our approach to a building block effort here with resource use, which may not necessarily then translate into something actionable if it's going to be used later for other ways of analyzing the system and its performance.
These questions of population and health plan, they're almost about what's the benchmark you want to compare yourself to.
They could be.
Yeah, this is Bruce again. I understand the actionability issue with respect to providers, but I don't know why we would want to limit ourselves to only that level of attribution. If you're interested in the benefit structure of a health plan and want to see how that benefit structure relates to resource use measures, then it's the plan or the plan administrators or the medical director or whatever, not necessarily an individual provider who has the action, put it that way.
Sure, and let me give you an example, a concrete example about, you know, where this kind of methodology could come in for comparison. If you wanted to look at a Medicaid program and how it spends money, well, for that extent, even Medicare, but let's stick with Medicaid. You get this big dollar item. But when we've done our analysis, we do things like exclude nursing home costs and exclude custodial care for developmental disabilities. And, you know, all of a sudden you start to slice out a variety of care or of costs that are very different from, say, managing acute care illnesses. And it really changes the metrics and the picture you get of where the money is going and where your targets are. So, I mean, you know, there would be potential value in having a standardized way of slicing through an analysis of what a Medicaid program spends, how it spends its money. Or is that way off topic or not on our agenda?
Well, I think it's reasonable to include that level of, and I agree, I don't know if we want to call it attribution or something else, considering that, you know, this is NQF's first adventure in calling for measures, I want to keep the base broad and see what comes in.
All right, well, let's see what comes in, and we can have the debate when we see what comes in, or the discussion when we see what comes in.
Yeah, this is Doris. I would agree with that. Remember, we're still pre-public comment, so I would strongly advocate to leave it in, see what happens with public comment, have a chance to regroup after that, and then see what we actually want to put out as the final call for measures as well. So I'd like to see it stay.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Great discussion. Thank you.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and switch back to the criteria table. We're now down on page 8. Page 8, we're still on 2A, on criteria 2A. I guess I'm just, again, want to make sure that all minds are settled in agreement on the 5 modules here that were agreed upon and recommended to be evaluated by the work group. And, okay.
This is Dolores. I have a question, and it relates to the profiling, which is, as someone else pointed out, more of a how do you apply the measure. And while I understand that these things are critical and can make or break the measure is used, my question is, this is part of the endorsement. Are we saying that in order for you to be able to say you're using the endorsed measure, you would have to use the same peer group assignment methodology, the same benchmarking, the same kinds of estimates, et cetera, because it's really limiting, and it doesn't really apply or may not apply to a lot of situations that the measure could apply to. So I'm struggling with how to make sure that measures are applied appropriately without limiting the use of a measure because it's so specific that it's not going to apply to very many situations or potentially not, or may not apply to many situations.
This is Barb Rudolph. That the call on this. That was one of the things that I was very concerned about, that no other arena yet within N2F have we described how things are going to be reported to the end user, the measure. And been a number of different efforts within N2F to look at sort of in the development of public reporting and performance measurement reporting, be able to allow, sort of go to the point that you can report this. And it's a major issue right now. It's CSAC, and we'll be discussing it more, but I was very concerned about that as well.
This is Bruce. I share the concern. I guess the philosophy here for me is what responsibility does a measure developer have for ensuring that the measure is appropriately used? Is that the measure developer's responsibility, or does the measure developer's responsibility end with the measure itself? This set of criteria seems to extend the measure developer's responsibility to the application of the measure. And I wonder, as Dart said, if that is being a bit too hard and setting the bar too high for the measure developers, because there are lots of different ways that one might apply the measure, and people have all sorts of disagreements about what an appropriate attribution rule is, and it seems to be asking too much of the measure developer to resolve those kinds of issues. Now, if this was a topic of conversation for the working group and they kind of considered that, it'd be nice to hear how that thinking developed through the work group process.
Is there anyone from the work group that wants to maybe talk about that? I'm not sure if it was discussed. We talked about it being very new.
Yeah.
So, Dolores, do you want to add something?
Yeah, I mean, I think we talk about it, and I had the same concern then, because these things are absolutely essential to how a measure is used. And I could certainly go through and tell you how I did these things for my application of this measure, but if someone else is applying the measure in a different situation, what I did may not apply to them. That's what I'm struggling with, and that actually could even apply to the costing methodology as well, because, you know, the white paper talks a lot about the perspective and who's measuring and who's being measured and what the perspective is and what you're trying to accomplish with it. And all of those things seem to really be related to that. And so I'm just not sure, you know, if we're saying that the measure is only going to be endorsed if it's applied exactly as, you know, all of these things were specified, I'm not sure that I would ever be able to use an endorsed measure, because my situation is probably different than, you know, a general situation. So that's my concern. But these are critical. So I don't know if we can make some kinds of, and maybe this is a separate, you know, project or something, but really look at rules or guidelines or principles for applying measures of resource use, instead of actually having it be part of the specification. I don't know. It's something that, because I'm just concerned that, you know, it's a critical part, but it's something that really is dependent on the use and the what you're trying to accomplish with the measure.
Well, is this something that would suggest, you know, that we would suggest is not an essential criteria, not as high, does not have as much weight as some of the other submission criteria? I put that out there. That I want to ask is, when we've spoken about the life of a measure in the past, folks at NQF have told us that the measure developer more or less does have a responsibility toward that measure. The visual that I constructed along with that discussion was similar to the FDA, for example, in its or a drug manufacturer in doing some post, you know, some phase four monitoring of the drug. Once it's out there, it's been approved and people are using it, well, then how does it work in real life? And that's the analogy that I drew with the NQF process. So perhaps this is a reasonable time to revisit what exactly is the measure developer's responsibility after a measure's been endorsed over the three-year life cycle prior to revisiting that measure.
Yeah, Darts, this is Helen. You know, they are very much responsible for the up, you know, the upkeep and the maintenance of the measure. I think it's a slightly different issue, though, that's being discussed, which is whether or not some of these key issues like attribution rules, peer group assignments, et cetera, would be, to use a term we've often talked about at the CFAC, baked into the measure itself such that it's actually part of the specifications, or is it something that you would want to examine that the developer had thought long and hard about that to demonstrate their, you know, that their true understanding of the measure and the complications therein, and that the measure has that capacity to do that, and perhaps, again, the concept of principles or guidance is something I think would be reasonable for you to think about. We don't actually, getting back to Barbara's point, have examples where we have this kind of information truly baked into the measures, but I know this is something the subcommittee has been thinking a lot about, and the question is, are these things different enough beasts, animals, that they need kind of different kinds of things attached to the endorsement? Just something to consider for the committee.
Okay, in the interest of time, we're actually growing. We're only about 10 minutes from our end time, and we have to allow a little bit of time for public comment, if there is any. So I'd like to just move through really quickly and just move, at least if we can get through scientific acceptability. I think usability and feasibility, there weren't that many changes. But
right, and I'll just add, we will circle back on this conversation. So
okay.
Drop the notes down, and we'll think of some way to tee it back up to all of you to get more input.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So the next two major sub-criteria for scientific acceptability are the reliability and validity. And we, again, framed this in that reliability testing should be supportive of the bulleted specification steps or modules, and the same for validity. And for each of those, in terms of submitting information, they will be required to submit the items that are in the far right column for data sample, analytic methods, and testing results.
Barb Rudolph again. I had some concerns about this because it wasn't clear whether the requirement was that for these extra measures, that this was M versus the other measures, because right now in sort of the evaluators of these submitted measures for all the other measures were saying that, you know, you can still get a measure endorsed if you consider the reliability testing or the validity testing, not requiring necessarily both to be in place and still have a measure endorsed. So it was a little unclear to me whether these were both mandatory. I think it's a lot to ask. This is very, very detailed, and I'm not sure exactly how you would do some of these things to do both reliability and validity tests.
I'd like Helen's input. My understanding was that there's two ways they could demonstrate validity. There's the item kind of data validity, and there's the measure validity, and that those two were still kind of ors, knowing that the measure even the measurement community in general might not be ready to move to the very high bar of measure construct validity. But reliability is pretty, I think, you know, you just got to be able to show you can produce the same results on the same data with the same population. And it may be the way we frame this, that it seems a higher bar than the quality side, but it shouldn't be. We're just trying to provide examples on how one might do that for resource use. Helen, did you want to add to that? But I don't think our intent is to make it a higher bar, just to make sure we're being clear what that might look like. So maybe we need to work on that language some.
Yeah, bar, it's definitely not intended to be a higher bar. I think it was more explanation for what reliability and validity mean in the context of these measures. What would be examined? But again, Barb, especially given your, you know, how comfortable you are with our process, if you have specific thoughts about language here that would make that more clear, we'd really welcome it.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments about the reliability and validity? And I'll just kind of skim through for another minute or so before we open it up for comment.
So these are not these are things we are asking for as criteria, and they're not if someone doesn't have extensive reliability validity testing, that's not necessarily a bar, right? It's not a mandate, but it's desirable.
Right, so you would look at what they submit, what they were able to do to test the reliability, you as in the steering committee and the TAP, and you could say, oh, pass completely, partial. You could even say, you know what, did you do this? Can you submit this, these additional data or results to us? So except for the importance criteria, each sub-criteria ends up getting a pass, fail, pass partially, et cetera, and then you look at how all of that stacks up. And
right.
Decision. Right.
So the point is, though, that we really, it may be a high bar, but I think we still have to include this. You know, we saw that McGlynn paper, which suggested that there's some concerns about reliability in these measures. And I think it would be negligent not to include these concerns.
I think that may be a good place to start. And we will figure out, again, the best way to circle back. And, of course, if you guys, you know, as we've discussed this and we move through, if you have any specific comments that you'd like to share, I would encourage you to email them and CC the group so that, you know, if there's any discussion over email that can be had, that would be extremely useful. And we're going to try to move forward and try to meet our goal of getting this posted by September 10th. So we'll keep you posted on that. I'm going to just try to get it. Gwen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Can you, is there anyone on the participant line?
We do have a few online, and if you do have a question or comment, just press star one.
Any questions from the public that you'd like to ask the steering committee? For those of you who've been listening to the discussion.
And once again, that is star one. And no one has queued at this time.
Okay. So we're going short, and I want to make sure that we end on time. Nagging questions or issues you want to bring up that maybe we need to consider during this last stretch of getting this out for comment or general comments for the committee to consider? Doris or Bruce?
Nothing here.
No, not here. I think it'll be interesting to see where parts of our conversation may be amplified or not even addressed in the public comments. I think it's a great opportunity to hear what others outside this group will think about these criteria.
Sorry, Rudolph. I had one question, and I'm sorry I wasn't able to be on the call earlier. I was doing a presentation, but it seems like clearly that this is about sort of the episode-based resource use. What about the other measures that will be coming through on maintenance that are not fairly episode-based? They're either designed, say, for the hospital as a unit of analysis. Would they go through the same steering committee who would then look to these new requirements, or would it What is the scope of this?
Barbara, this is Helen. I'm not sure we have any other classic resource use. We do have the length of stay measures are the only thing I can think of that's somewhat close.
Right.
And we can talk with you offline to think about where they're best. I'm not sure exactly where they're slated to go through maintenance at this point. But I think much of this is very unique to measures of, you know, more classic resource use. But let's follow up offline.
Yeah. But I think that's a good point, that I don't think we've thought through the non-resource measures.
Exactly. Yes. Right.
Yeah. And I, you know, so I keep raising the avoidable hospitalization measures, but there's also these DCG, ACG methods, which are risk adjustment for costs. And so they don't necessarily have attribution involved, but they could be used for that. And I think that the vendors actually do have attribution.
This is Bruce. I hope that the community of measure developers don't look at the request for measures and say, oh, what they're looking for is exclusively episodes-based measures.
Right.
So, and if the material gives that impression, then we ought to make sure it's purged of that, and that the public and the measure developers are clear that we're looking for more than just episode-based measures. And you know, a lot of these population-based measures that we're talking about, a population of patients, do use those adjustment technologies, and one would hope that there's the potential for real advancement in that framework. That is the population-based measures.
But so it's probably not feasible that we're going to go through this now with a fine-tooth comb with that sensibility, and what we're going to actually do is rely on the feedback we get from the field and try to do it in the next draft?
When you say do that, you mean finalize the evaluation criteria?
Well, I mean right now revise the evaluation criteria with just that sensibility in mind that we try to make sure that it doesn't seem to be limited to episode-based efficiency measures.
Yeah, so the creation of the episode, I mean, the evaluation criteria has intentionally been done to not be narrow. So if it's giving that impression, I think that we need to work on the nomenclature or the language. Maybe we're using jargon that's more familiar to episode type of based measures. And as far as, you know, we'll take what we've gotten here today, think about how to communicate back, especially the outstanding questions, to all of you before we pose for public comment. But then the other opportunity to really frame this particular phase of a resource use effort at NQF is during the call for measures, where we'll be very explicit. While the evaluation criteria may be broad, we're interested in these types of measures and, you know, to evaluate in 2010 just to help us balance volume of what's going to be expected from the steering committee and the TAPs during the evaluation process. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think so.
We'll see.
So if you see anything in the evaluation criteria that, you know, limited to episode-based measures, please let us know, because that is absolutely not the intent. We want this criteria to be able to live beyond even this first call of measures with, you know, probably minor improvements here and there, but we don't want it to make it restricted.
This is Barb again. My question about that would be is, are you looking for the components of these kinds of code-based measures to be coming in separately from the measure? I'm at, say, the APRDRG groupers or the DCGs or all of those groupers are, you know, very complex in and of themselves, let alone wrapped with an entire set of these sort of criteria for the measure. I'm just wondering if you're going to, you know, have a call for the sort of underlying, say, groupers, or that just, is it just going to be for, that it has to encompass the whole process of measurement?
We were just talking about that yesterday, and I think it warrants further conversation. We don't want to evaluate groupers in the context of hundreds of pages of software application. We're trying, but it's not, there's no clear line drawn that says this is where that part of the effort stops and then this is where the clinical logic picks up. We really want to focus on the clinical logic, how you construct your measure. So what are your trigger start dates? What are your end dates, et cetera? But I think, it's absolutely true that it's going to be hard to disentangle the two.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of where I felt like the TAP sort of fell down in the past was doing that disentanglement because it was so complicated. TAP, you know, could have spent, you know, probably a year looking at the grouper logic and just couldn't do it. So.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out, because you're asking for so many different types of testing, I felt that it's going to be really complicated as a, you know, for the measure developers to know what level of detail to give.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Barbara, and those are exactly the kind of issues that we're going to have to think through, and if you could look towards this draft with that lens, that would be really helpful. And, again, we are still trying to think through exactly what we're going to ask for, but it definitely will be, you know, beyond just the episode-based measures as well. So definitely get back to the steering committee, and, you know, any of your insights would be very, very welcome.
Right. Okay, thanks. So as Sally mentioned, we will circle back to you perhaps even with some specific questions that have come up today to maybe get the conversation going or some responses via email. And I'll as always, if you have any questions or issues that come up or maybe that we didn't bring up in the follow-up email, please let us know. And we'll keep you posted.
Okay.
What are our next calls? October 5th call is canceled, but we have one on?
The 20th. So we, 20th. In light of starting the comment period a little bit later, we had to move that October 5th call to the 20th. We will send out, once the comment period is complete, we'll send out a table or some kind of document with all the comments in there, and we'll structure the discussion around what is received during that comment period. So we'll be following up with you guys and keeping you informed on how things are going. So,
but that's the next call.
Yes.
October 20th. Great.
Uh-huh. All righty. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Let us know if you need anything.
Okay.
Thanks
very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone. That does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation.